Interface incomplete. Please stand by. Now downloading Tech Talk Radio with Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ. Tech Talk Radio, it's technology you can understand. And now, here are Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ.
Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. I'm Dr. Richard Schertz.
And I'm Jim Russ.
And we're going to review some interesting technology this week. It's, kind of a slow week for news, being, the summer. But lots of stuff to think about and to figure out. We're going to talk about some components that you may need for a home theater system. Some nice headphones for under $50.
Nicer than the ones you're using right now?
Much nicer. Okay. Much nicer. And I'm going to give an update on my Harmony Link remote that I'm using. It's my Wi-Fi remote at home. I'm telling you, I'm just getting to love this thing. And so I thought I'd give an update on it because I talked about it briefly when I bought it. But then I, of course, now have been using it. And the more I use it, the more I like it. Today we're going to feature the man who invented flash memory.
Really?
Yeah. Both the flash memory that's used for, for storing BIOS, the high-speed fast memory, or else the fast memory or the flash memory which is used for thumb drives and for solid-state drives. And this guy invented it. He got the patent. He was working for Toshiba, and he was awarded $300.
Really?
For his invention.
Gee, that's worth it.
Yeah. So I'm going to talk about the sorry tale of the man who invented flash memory.
That is sad.
He didn't make much money. He worked for a Japanese company. And so it's kind of sorry about that. I have emailed you, by the way, a file. Thanks for the memory. Because when we talk about this, particular man, we're going to thank him for the memory using the words of Bob Hope.
Gotcha.
Now, it's also been a very, very big mailbag this week, as always.
Has it really?
There's a letter in your mailbox.
There is. I tell you, Mr. Big Voice is really on top of it. Just a little bit ahead of it.
Somebody,
that's okay.
Somebody has to.
That's
right.
We got an email from Ken Hutchison. Dear Doc, I tuned in today to the regular time and heard football instead of the show. Actually, the class. I listened for about half an hour and checked every hour for the next several hours. The last time I checked was about 1:30. I went to Facebook page during the show. It would have been to see if it had been on and to see whether there had been any update on Facebook. Later, I discovered I would have heard the show if I just checked one more time at 2 o'clock.
Yeah.
I really don't like to wait until the podcast is available because I like to hear the show, the class, live. As you may know, I'm a regular listener, and I don't like to miss a single show. Will be replayed? If so, when? And when will the podcast be available? Please announce future time changes on Facebook. Thanks, Ken Hutchison. Well, Ken, that was a great email and a good idea. I should have posted that to the Facebook webpage.
Yeah, we kind of found out last minute, though, that we were going to be moved.
Yeah, we didn't know when we were going to be actually on
the air.
And at
1:30 last Saturday, I think we went for a walk, didn't we?
I think, yeah, we were walking, trying to get, we were just hanging around waiting for that riveting football commentary to be finished after the 50-10 loss. But I'll tell you, Ken, I'm gonna do that. And by the way, the podcast from last week's show is posted. Just simply go to techtalkonline.com or Apple iTunes, and you can download it, as always. We got an email from Kathy Skoog. The fine dining tickets are awesome. I'm a longtime listener to Tech Talk, and I never called in to give an answer. I only called because no one responded. It was a pleasant surprise, much more than I imagined, much better. I'm looking forward to the experience. Thank you, Kathy Skoog. Well, Kathy, you're the first person that's written and said they love the fine dining. Thanks a lot.
That's fabulous.
Well, actually, she likes the fine dining tickets. Now we'll wait until she goes to fine dining to see if we have further response.
I'm sure, because you're not teaching these people to make peanut butter and jelly sandwiches now, are you?
No, we're not. No, it is. We got an email from Fair and Good. Mm-hmm. Dear Dr. Schertz, I read this book a while back when I was working on a custom software project for a large government client. The client had found a COTS product, which is on the shelf, which is product on the shelf, COTS on the shelf, And they felt it met some of their needs, but it needed to be enhanced. Our team of developers was then tasked with enhancing the COTS application. There were issues galore, one thing after another, until I finally and I recently learned that it was never used by the agency. I'm wondering if you've ever read the book "The Inmates Are Running the Asylum." Are you familiar with the author? And why do software development projects frequently go south? Do you agree with the premise of the book? Thanks, fair and good. Well. Fair and good. I do agree with the premise of the book. However, the author is just a little bit arrogant and self-promoting. He's trying to sort of sell his consulting operation. So the last 100 pages of the book, a little bit self-congratulatory, I guess would be the word.
Mm-hmm.
But he makes some very good points. And there, and if I could just have an aside here, they're really
as many asides as you like.
Thank you.
Because it is your classroom.
Well, thank you. That is true. When it is your class, you can have as many asides. That's part of the union regulations, I believe.
It's the aside ruling. The aside sidebar.
The aside side letter. That's right. Well, when you're developing software, there are really two approaches to software. They got laying it out. You've got the waterfall approach and the agile software approach. Now, the waterfall approach is kind of the traditional method where you get the requirements. It's sequential. You get the requirements, and then you design. You come up with the concept, and then you initiate the project. You analyze it. You design it. You construct it. You test it. You produce it. You implement it, and then you maintain it. And each of these steps goes from one to the next, like water flowing down steps. And so it's called the waterfall method. Now, the advantage of the waterfall method is that you've got a very good requirements document. And this has been the traditional way software had been done. And it's really based on all kinds of the way that equipment is manufactured. It's a standard way to design stuff. Now, the disadvantage is that frequently, by the time the software is finished, the requirements have changed.
Mm-hmm.
And so you got to go back, and you got to start the waterfall over again. Your requirements change, and then you don't talk to your customers very often. And so that has become less preferred in recent times as we go to an agile development method. And the agile development method is more iterative and incremental, and there are a number of ways to do this. But in the agile method, you don't build the entire system at once, but rather you develop incrementally, and then you test it out. And so less time is invested up front for documenting the requirements as the development is done incrementally. Another characteristic of agile software development is that the customer feedback occurs simultaneously with the development. So unlike the waterfall approach that performs all the testing after completion of the project. Critics claim that the agile method is too unstructured. Of course, I love unstructured.
Yes, you do.
But those that are in favor of it say, hey, this is a quick way to release software quickly and have the customers involved at all times. And so I think one reason why many projects go south is that requirements change, and then by the time it's released, it doesn't meet the needs. So agile software has been developed to solve that problem. And one characteristic of agile software development is that you might have a release every 2 weeks. You might release a new block of code, test it out, release it every 2 weeks. So then you've got constant product that could be evaluated by the customers for constant feedback. That's the kind of stuff, by the way, that we teach in our software engineering program, Masters in Software Engineering. We place students all over the country in software engineering. So that was a great question,
yeah.
Fair and good. We got an email from Jim. Dear Doc, there is much talk on the web about the latest Java vulnerability. As I use Java a lot, and this is rumored to be quite serious, I'd like your opinion on the matter. The usual remedy on the web is either to uninstall Java altogether. When I did this, however, I found that a lot of my favorite websites just did not function. In particular, my online crossword puzzles didn't really work. Thanks, Jim. Well, Jim, let me give some clarification. Many people are confused between Java and JavaScript. Java is not JavaScript. In fact, other than the first four characters in their name, JavaScript and Java are not related to each other at all. JavaScript is a programming language that's supported entirely by most web browsers. This means that the browsers come with the means to understand and execute JavaScript, and it's at what's called an interpreter program, or scripts written in JavaScript are often contained directly in the HTML pages in which they're contained. HTML pages are the web pages in which they're used. JavaScript allows you to have a highly interactive web page that you can, you know, when the script is executed by your browser, you get back a lot of response. Sites like Gmail, Facebook, and others use JavaScript to display, animate, change content without requiring that you visit a new page to download the entire new page. You can just update certain pieces of the page. So it's become very popular. So when you go to your browser and disable JavaScript, Jim, you're not disabling Java. That's something different.
That's interesting. I wouldn't have known
that. That is something different. Yeah,
unless you told me this morning in the classroom of the airwaves.
Exactly. Now, Java is actually a programming language. Now, it's not natively supported by browsers, but it's used on websites. It requires that you download the Java Virtual Machine, JVM, and it's more commonly referred to as the Java runtime environment. Programs written in Java are typically compiled into an intermediate form that is more efficiently executed by the Java runtime environment. As such, Java programs are typically separate downloads. You might have a Java program which is embedded inside of a web page, but it's actually running Java through the Java runtime environment. Now, there are many standalone Java applications, and they run and execute just like any other program and may not be related to the web or the internet at all. So the only way to really disable your Java is to uninstall it, because it's a program that's activated. So those are really two different things. You might, if you have Java on your machine, might make certain that you download the latest updates from Sun Microsystems to make certain that you've got this thing operating properly and secure. I don't really think these Java vulnerabilities are going to be that serious as long as you've got the latest updates going for you. We have an email from John in Fairfax. Dear Tech Talk, I just came back from vacation, and I have over 2,400 photos on my memory card.
Whoa.
When I went to offload the photos to my computer, the card read blank. It's
that's really sad.
It is really painful. I just have to pause because of the pain
that he's feeling.
I'm feeling your pain, John. Uh-oh. I know that I did not. I learned that from Bill Clinton, by the way.
Is that where you got that? Okay.
I just saw him this week. He was on my mind. I feel your pain. Mm-hmm. I know that I did not reformat the card. Is there any hope for me to recover the pictures that I took? Thanks, John. Well, John, you've got actually three options. It's pretty simple.
Can't wait to hear
this. Okay, first, you might put your memory card into different computers to see whether you can read it. So, you know, because it's actually a memory card reader. You slip it in and try different readers. It could be a reading problem, could be a contact problem. That's always the first thing to do. Check whether it's the interface problem. Now, secondly, you might try to recover the data from your memory card using a program that I've talked about before, Recuva, Recuva. Mm-hmm. And you can simply download that. Just Google Recuva, Recuva. And that will actually go on to the device, and it will look directly at the data, and you may be able to copy that data directly from the card onto your hard drive and recover it that way. That would be my second option. Now, your third option is going to be expensive. You could send it to a recovery data service, and there, you know, but you're talking, you know, possibly hundreds of dollars. That would be your third option. Now, I think I got to talk, you know, getting 2,400 pictures on the drive without doing intermediate backing up or copying is probably not a good practice. So I would recommend that you, when you go on these long vacations, you find some way to copy and transfer the pictures off of your memory card, so that you don't have them all in one place, because you actually don't have a backup.
Right. Well, how would you back it up? What would you suggest?
Well, I mean, you'd have to have a computer.
Yeah, and
you could copy it to the hard drive. They also have some memory cards that have a Wi-Fi connection, So you could, you know, they've got these memory cards with Wi-Fi, and so you could possibly just use a Wi-Fi connection. But you know, you just basically plug your camera on into your computer. Or you could, you know, some computers actually have a place where you could plug in the memory stick and just copy the photos to your computer as you go through your trip. That's usually what I do, but it requires that you've got to take have a computer with you. It's kind of a drag.
How about if you went to like a public computer and emailed the pictures to yourself? How would that?
Yeah, that would work. Now you'd have to copy them to the you could if the public computer had a USB port that was open.
Right.
You could just simply, you know, hook your camera up to that USB port, and it would look like an external drive. And you could go to Gmail, and then you could email them. That's actually pretty good idea.
Wait a minute, and
that
how many
is actually
I've come up with a good idea.
I have to say, Jim, that is a very good idea. That is a very good idea. Let me make a note on make a note on that. Okay, I'm going to write that down.
He didn't really make a note of that.
Yeah, but okay. So that's well, John. I hope that works, and you might write back just to see whether you actually were able to recover those pictures.
We'd love to know because that's sad.
That is really true.
We do feel his pain, don't we?
We feel his pain. Yes, indeed.
Well, you're listening to Tech Talk. By some unknown miracle, we're here at the regular time and on the air this Saturday morning on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2, 103.5 FM HD2. Stand by. Profiles in IT next on Tech Talk Radio.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
My career was going nowhere.
College just wasn't working for me.
I was lost. Then I discovered Stratford University.
Stratford.
Stratford University. Stratford helped me take the skills I already had and turn them into a career.
I'm more of a hands-on learner, and I just couldn't make it in those large classes.
I finally knew I had to do something different.
With campuses in Tyson's Corner and Woodbridge, Stratford helps you earn your accredited degree in business administration, culinary arts, allied health, hotel and restaurant management, information technology, and hospitality management through day, evening, weekend, and online courses. And with 10-week sessions and rolling enrollments, you can jumpstart your new career when you're ready.
Now I'm on my way to a real career.
I love my classes and professors. Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford University. Just start it and we'll help you finish. For information, call 1-800-444-0804 or check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. And now it is time for
Profiles in IT.
Yes, today we're going to feature Fujio Masuka.
Uh-huh.
You know, are you familiar with Fujio?
I'm about to be. Yeah. I have a funny feeling.
Fujio Masuka. Fujio Masuka is the inventor of flash memory, both the flash memory that's used to store your BIOS as well as the flash memory that's used on thumb drives and solid-state drives. Dr. Fujio Masuka was born May 8, 1943, in Takasaki, Japan. In 1966, he received his Bachelor of Science in Engineering from Tohoku University. Tohoku University.
I'm not familiar with their
work. You're
not
familiar with Tohoku University?
No, I'm not.
In 1971, he completed his PhD in engineering from Tohoku University. 4 months later, he joined Toshiba. That would be in 1971. And within a few months after joining Toshiba, Masuka invented a type of memory known as SAMOS, S-A-M-O-S. It's a metal oxide semiconductor type of memory, SAMOS, S-A-M-O-S. OS. After 5 years at Toshiba, he invented another type of memory, and he was moved to the semiconductor production division, where he developed the 1 megabit DRAM. That's dynamic RAM. course, dynamic RAM, DRAM, is the kind of RAM that's in your computer, and when you turn it off, it forgets everything.
Mm-hmm.
It's dynamic. It's there. It stores stuff temporarily, but once you take the voltage off of it, bingo, it's gone. Has no memory. Whereas static RAM, which is what Masuka invented, it remains and it remembers even after the power is turned off, which of course is a good thing if you want a memory device. So he was working on the 1 megabit DRAM, dynamic RAM. Now, one of the biggest challenges facing the industry in the 1970s was to find a way to retain memory so it wouldn't vanish every time the power turned off. They wanted static RAM. They didn't know how to do it. Engineers found it too cumbersome to build non-volatile memory for each bit of information. And Masuka's insight was that information needed to be stored in big batches rather than in single bits. Without permission from Toshiba, Masuka began spending his nights and weekends working on this idea. You know, burning the midnight oil, coming up with all kinds of ideas. By 1980, it applied for the basic patents for a type of flash memory that is now known as NOR-type flash memory. That's used for BIOS. It's actually fast. It's a fast flash memory. But it was not until 4 years later, after promotion, that he was able to produce the first flash memory. You see, the thing is, he couldn't get permission to use the processing facility to build it. He invented it. But they said, come on, you know, we're making money on this dynamic RAM. Why are you, you know, you got this little ridiculous project.
What are you wasting our time?
You know, you're wasting our time. We're not going to give you any time in the lab. So what happened is he got some very good incremental improvements in dynamic RAM. And so he got a promotion and then he had access to the lab.
Mm-hmm.
So then, unknown to Toshiba, he went in and he actually produced flash memory in the lab as a side project, and he had the authorization to do it after his big invention, after he'd waited 4 years to get in the lab. He was really quite excited about it because it worked perfectly. Then he decided to present his paper at the International Electronic Developers Meeting in San Jose, California. He went there, talked about flash memory. He made that presentation in 1984.
Wow.
That was the year that just before the PC was, you know, 1985 was when the IBM PC came out. So this is about the time when PCs were actually almost ready to hit the mainstream. American semiconductor industrialists, a.k.a. Intel, mm-hmm. looked at this and they were scared. They said, you know, Japan is taking off in this flash memory area. They must have some huge strategic team working on flash on this static RAM. And so they were just really shaking in their boots because they thought, man, if Toshiba gets this, they're going to own the market. So Intel went back and they put 300 engineers to work on it.
Jeez.
They were to develop flash memory because they wanted to compete with Fujio Masuka mm-hmm. and his major team. Of one. Now, although Masuka's, and so Masuka went back after the, after the presentation, and his bosses, they said, you know, I'm kind of surprised these guys in America are so interested in what you're doing. You know, they called, they wanted to see samples of what you'd done, and I don't know how you got interest in this little sandbox project. So they finally decided to let him have 5 part-time engineers. This, you know, we can't give you too much. We've got 5 guys here, got a little extra time. You can use them part time. So he put together his crack team of 5 part time engineers to really deliver this. Now, Masuka's group was the first group to sell flash memory, but it was not long after that that Intel entered and dominated the market. They owned the flash memory market. Mm-hmm.
It's really funny that they went crazy about this thing, and Toshiba really didn't care, right?
Toshiba didn't recognize it. I mean, it's peculiar because they were making so much money on DRAM that they said, well, why are we messing around with this static RAM stuff? It's a classic case of management failure. Now, in 1986, and so Intel owned the market. He had the patent. You know, by the way, because he patented this stuff, Toshiba, gets around $50 million in royalty payments for his patents on flash memory because other people are doing it. So actually, he did quite a bit of good work. Now, Texas Instruments was infringing on these patents, so Toshiba sued Texas Instruments in 1986, and he was spending about half his time in the U.S. sitting around waiting to testify at this patent lawsuit. And he says, "Shoot, while I'm sitting here, why don't I just you know try to invent something else?" Because he had invented a very high speed statogram, which is connected to the CPU. It's used for like. Yeah, you know, BIOS. It's used for the basic input-output circuit, and it's basically has to be fairly high speed. He says, "What I need is a cheaper but slower flash memory that I could use to replace a hard drive and use it for external memory, and it can be slower because it's not directly connected to the CPU." So he started scratching out on yellow paper while he was sitting here waiting to testify at the. At his patent trial there at between Toshiba and Texas Instruments, and he invented NAND type of memory. This is not AND flash memory; it's another way of organizing the memory. And so he worked on NAND type flash memory, and that's used in memory cards, memory sticks, solid state drives. And again, in 1987, he went back. He couldn't get Toshiba interested in this. I mean, this is going to be solid state drives, thumb drives. We now know how big it is. And they said, "Okay, here comes Fujio again with another crazy idea," and he couldn't get permission to work on this thing. So he then made batches of this new type of flash memory in the lab without permission again, and it actually worked. Now, what happened is after he invented this second type of flash memory in 87, his bosses said, "You're not a team player. You're always off doing stuff in the back." They didn't like that in Japan. They don't like people that are team players, and so they tried to move him out, tried to give him less responsibility, tried to cut him off, tried to do all kinds of things to sort of punish him. Finally, though, some people, trade magazines, were highlighting his huge invention of flash memory, and they were saying, "Look what Intel," and everybody thought Intel had invented it, and Intel said, "No, we didn't invent it. Toshiba invented it," and Intel was very proud of the fact. They said, "Usually something's invented in the U.S. and then the Japanese steal it and produce it. This time it was invented in Japan and the Americans stole it." And they were so proud of the fact that there was this reverse movement of technology. And so Toshiba was ashamed that they treated him so shabbily. So they did award him a $300 bonus.
That's even more of a slap in the face, yeah. I think.
$300
Give
bonus,
me a break.
And that was it. Now after this invention, they repeatedly tried to move him from a senior post to a position where he could do no further research. He wasn't good as a team player. I mean, this poor guy.
Jeez.
In 1994, he quit.
See, took him that long?
Yeah, because he felt that. When you worked for a company in Japan, you worked for that company for life.
Uh-huh.
This was his attitude.
You worked
for them for life. And see, they actually wouldn't fire you because then they would move you to a role where you couldn't do anything if they didn't like you, but they wouldn't fire you because people, this was the age when people had a job for life. But he finally quit in 1994, and he became a professor at a university in Japan, and he started working on three-dimensional silicon structure. See, because now silicon is getting so densely packed that we're running out of real estate. Because if you make them too small, you start having quantum effects, and then transistors don't behave like transistors because when you get things that are too small, your electrons tunnel through the insulator, and the insulators stop working properly. So there's a limit on how small you can make semiconductor devices. And so he said, if we can stack it up, we can get more real estate on the same chip. So he thinks that we can get capacity increased by about a factor of 10. Now, this time, he's filing for the patents on his own using his own name. So if there is some money to be made here, he's going to make it.
Mm-hmm.
So he's going to try to tie in with some of the VCs in the U.S. Now, Toshiba is still a little embarrassed about how poorly they treated Fujio Musaka. And so they now say that researchers can now spend 10% of their time on their own projects. I mean, that makes sense.
Sure.
Even Google's letting people spend 20% of their time one day a week.
That's how innovation happens, isn't it?
It is. In addition, they've increased the annual ceiling on how much inventors are allowed to receive from royalties on their patents. They raised it from $8,000 to $80,000. So Toshiba had an $8,000 limit on royalties, bonuses, and they only gave him $300. So he's, you know, I saw Fujio Musaka. I looked at him on several YouTube videos. He's not a bitter man.
Mm-hmm.
He's just, I mean, he's a scientist, very proud of his flash memory activities. And so I think it's he's quite a good guy, and I do like him. Fujio Musaka, the inventor of flash memory, the man who did not make money out of the deal.
Yeah, it's really a shame that he got the short end of the stick.
And I think we just have to thank Fujio for the memory. What do you think?
I think we should do that, and we have a special way of doing that right now, ladies and gentlemen. Bob Hope.
The memory of all you flying men. We can't remember when. We've had more royal treatment.
Well, there you go.
Be back again. And thank you so much.
Can't remember the last time I heard this.
Thanks for the memory.
Uh-huh. The memory stick. Well, that was fascinating. It's a shame. You profile so many people on this show that have given us something huge and really didn't get much in return for it.
It frequently happens to the first movers who really aren't focused on money. They actually just focus on achieving something.
If you think about this for a second, as you mentioned during the profile, the flash drive technology actually was there before the PC was out.
Yeah, it was.
Isn't that crazy?
It's been around for a while, but sort of the high-capacity flash drives had to wait until silicon processing technology could catch up.
Mm-hmm.
And who would have known that even Bob Hope would be thanking Fujio for the memory?
Considering he did this probably like 1942 or something. Yeah, no kidding. Well, there you go. That's our Profiles in IT for today. Hope you enjoyed it. Hope you're paying attention, because with any luck, we're going to be asking you a question in a few minutes, and you might be able to win free food. This is Tech Talk Radio. On Federal News Radio, heard on one of these fine radio stations in the Washington, D.C. area every Saturday morning at 9. WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWT FM HD2 Manassas, and WTOP FM HD2 Washington. We'll be right back.
It's technology. It's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
According to the U.S. Bureau of Labor, 5 of the 30 occupations projected to grow the fastest by 2016 are IT-related, led by network and data communications analysts, software engineers, and systems analysts. 70% of business technology professionals surveyed by Information Week say there is a shortage of IT talent in the U.S. today. However, if you have previous military or management experience, there are tremendous opportunities for you in the IT field if you retrain. Stratford University's bachelor's degree in information technology prepares you to analyze, design, implement, administer, and secure computer networks and information systems. Master's degrees are also offered in information systems and software engineering. Day and evening classes are offered so you can continue in your current field. Call Stratford University at 800-444-0804 or visit online at stratford.edu. That's 800-444-0804. Stratford University, Tyson's Corner in Woodbridge.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. The FBI is planning to upgrade their biometric capabilities. Have you heard about this?
I have not, no.
You know, even though we do have a huge deficit, the FBI is spending $1 billion to upgrade their biometric technology. Now, they're going ahead with the Advanced Biometric Identification Service, and it's been tested, and they'll phase into operation around the nation over the next couple of years. The official launch of the so-called Next Generation Identification Program, NGI, is part of the agency's billion-dollar upgrade of the agency's fingerprint database. And some states have already participated in the pilot program by uploading photos because they are upgrading the digital database by adding photos and face recognition. Since 1993, the error rate on face recognition systems has dropped by about a factor of 272. It's getting very, very, very good. In fact, you've got, you know, Facebook has got face recognition being developed into it. You've got, I've got Picasa, and it does face recognition. I can identify people. I upload all my photos to Picasa, and I can identify one person's face, and it will look through all the photos and tell me what photos that person is in by using face recognition. It's really quite, quite good. Now, it's impossible to tell exactly how the FBI plans to acquire and use facial recognition data in now and in the future. However, given the information in these documents, it's clear that they are planning to use it in some very significant way. Now, here's a summary of some of the advanced features that they're talking about. Interstate photo system enhancements, including the ability to accept and search for photographs of scars, marks, and tattoos. A better fingerprint identification technology for faster, more accurate identification. A new wrap-back service notifying authorized agencies about criminal activity reported on individuals holding positions of trust. A national palm print system, which allows the storage and search of palm print submissions from law enforcement agencies. See, always before, it's just fingerprints, not the palm.
Uh-huh.
And a more powerful system for multimodal biometrics, which will include things like voice, facial recognition, retina identification. Many are concerned that this information will result in further loss of privacy, particularly with public surveillance cameras. This is the issue. If you go to England, for instance, they have surveillance cameras everywhere. You walk around, you just walk around London, you're going to be on a surveillance camera all the time. If you couple the actual surveillance cameras with face recognition, they may be able, you see, to actually have a database of every place you go, everything you do, and it's an enormous loss of privacy. And so now the privacy advocates are kind of up in arms over this FBI database. They say, wait a minute, this is too much like Big Brother. And so there's quite a bit of pushback on it, but it's a great application of technology.
Excellent. Tell you what, you're probably saying, wait a minute, you guys forgot something.
We didn't forget anything. We didn't forget
a thing. The pop quiz is coming up in just a minute, so I hope you were paying attention to Profiles in IT because your chance to win free food is coming up from Stratford University and Tech Talk Radio. Stand by, more of Tech Talk right after this on 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2, 103.5 FM HD2. Tech Talk continues after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
My career was going nowhere.
College just wasn't working for me.
I was lost. Then I discovered Stratford University.
Stratford.
Stratford University. Stratford helped me take the skills I already had and turn them into a career.
I'm more of a hands-on learner, and I just couldn't make it in those large classes.
I finally knew I had to do something different. With campuses in Tyson's Corner and Woodbridge, Stratford helps you earn your accredited degree in business administration, culinary arts, allied health, hotel and restaurant management, information technology, and hospitality management through day, evening, weekend, and online courses. And with 10-week sessions and rolling enrollments, you can jumpstart your new career when you're ready.
Now I'm on my way to a real career.
I love my classes and professors. Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford was exactly what I needed. Stratford University. Just start it and we'll help you finish. For information, call 1-800-444-0804 or check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
And now, It's time for Washington's most popular and longest-running radio game show, the Stratford University Pop Quiz. Now, here's your host and star of our show. No, it's not Gene Rayburn. It's not Alex Trebek. It's not Richard Dawson. It's Dr. Richard Schertz.
This is a classroom of the airwaves, not a radio show.
No, I'm too exhausted today to even fight this.
We can't even fight that. Now, here's the thing. What we've decided to do this time, instead of having the pop quiz right after Profiles on IT, we decided an intermediate segment there to check your long-term memory.
Exactly. I'm glad you came up with that.
We're checking it, you know, if you have to... You have to hear it, and then you have to remember it. Now, the beauty of having a classroom of the airways, of course, is the pop quiz. And if you get the correct answer to the pop quiz, you'll get two tickets to fine dining to the Escoffier Dining Room, Karim Dining Room. All you have to do is call in with the correct answer to the pop quiz. Earlier in the show, I was talking about Fujio Masuka. Fujio Masuka. He is, of course, inventor of flash memory. It should be Dr. Fujio Masuka. And he was working for Toshiba when he invented both types of flash memory, the NOR flash memory as well as the NAND flash memory. One is a slow and one is a fast flash memory. They're used for memory sticks, for solid state drives, or for to store things like BIOS on your computer. Toshiba, though, did actually reward him for these very valuable patents, because they're receiving probably $50 million a year in royalties, plus they're making a lot of money producing these devices. How big of a bonus did Toshiba give to Fujio for this major invention of flash memory?
Why, if you have the answer to that question, you have to get it to us using old technology. POTS line, telephone.
Yeah.
And the number to call is 877-936-9333. If you're calling from west of Takasaki, Japan, and east of Falls Church, it's 877-936-9333. And, of course, the wild card line is 877-936-9333.
If you're calling from Galapagos Islands using with a Wi-Fi connection, you can use Skype and simply go to Tech Talk Radio 1 and call that particular account, and it will be forwarded to the studio free of charge.
Okay. All right. Now, the phones, believe it or not, are melting. So while adjunct professor for IT technology and telecom, Claude Jennings, answered the phone, you can talk about something else.
Oh, yeah. Right. I want to talk about my Logitech Harmony Link remote. I love this Logitech Harmony Link. It retails for about $99. It was a gift for my son because our remotes were always broken. And the thing I love about this Harmony Link, it hooks to my Wi-Fi network. So what I can do is I take the Harmony Link, I configure it for my devices. I simply and then I log it into my Wi-Fi network, and then I download an application to my iPhone or to my iPad. And I can completely control my TV and the whole home theater system from my iPad or my iPhone from anywhere in the house. So we actually have in the house, we have two iPads and two iPhones in the house. So now we have four remotes. And this thing just works great. It's actually a kind of a disc that's about 4 inches in diameter and about 3/4 inch high. And it's an IR blaster, so it connects to the Wi-Fi. The Wi-Fi... The signal then is sent to the device via Wi-Fi. It converts that request into an IR blast, and the IR blaster then communicates through to the television set and all the devices. So I have the IR blaster on top of my console bouncing off the wall, hitting the TV. And then I have two what they call mini blasters that are actually blasters, IR blasters on a wire. And I take two of those mini blasters and I put them down inside of my console case so then I can control all the devices inside of this deal. And I'm telling you, it is working really nice. And so now, of course, I don't watch much TV, but when I want to watch TV, it is there.
Wow.
And what I particularly like about it is, suppose I'm upstairs and I said, oh, we forgot to turn off the TV. Since it's a Wi-Fi system, I just go to my iPhone, I turn off the TV downstairs from anywhere in the house. So it's very nice. Or if somebody's watching the TV downstairs, I can actually just very easily switch the channel and cause a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And I certainly do enjoy doing that.
You know, that is because I know this about you. You're an antagonist, so
yes.
You will do that. Okay, now let's play the quiz because we have somebody on the phone. Let's go to line three. This is Rick, who is calling from my hometown of Baltimore, Maryland. Rick, good morning and welcome to Tech Talk. How are you?
I'm good. How are you, Jim?
Excellent. Good. Thank you. Doc, go ahead and ask the question.
Yeah, earlier in the show we talked about Fujio Musaka. He, of course, inventor of flash memory, and he was richly rewarded for that invention by Toshiba. What was the dollar amount of his award?
It would be $300.
That is correct.
Rick, we have two Ricks.
Yeah.
Rick Schertz, tell him what he's won.
You win two tickets to Fine Dining, to Escoffier Dining Room, Karim Dining Room. Stay on the line, give your name and address and email address to our producer, and we'll get those tickets out to you next week.
Rick, it is at this juncture I ask, have you been listening to the program for long?
For about 3 weeks.
Excellent.
One Saturday afternoon, I heard your voice, and I thought, that's not WBAL. It's
that's funny, because I work at another radio station. Rick,
yeah.
Thanks a million for listening to both.
Just let me say that you are far and away the most articulate reporter on WBAL.
Thank you so much, Rick. I appreciate that. And thank you for calling.
You're going to record
four tickets now,
that's right?
And I
think you're going to record that, too.
I think it's been recorded. Rick, thank you for listening both during the week and during the weekends here on Tech Talk. And stand by. We'll get that information from you. You are listening to Tech Talk Radio on 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2, 103.5 FM HD2. More of Tech Talk continues right after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
My career was going nowhere.
College just wasn't working for me.
I was lost. Then I discovered Stratford University.
Stratford.
Stratford University. Stratford helped me take the skills I already had and turn them into a career.
I'm more of a hands-on learner, and I just couldn't make it in those large classes.
I finally knew I had to do something different.
With campuses in Tysons Corner and Woodbridge, Stratford helps you earn your accredited degree in business administration, culinary arts, allied health, hotel and restaurant management, information technology, and hospitality management through day, evening, weekend, and online courses. And with 10-week sessions and rolling enrollments, you can jumpstart your new career when you're ready.
Now I'm on my way to a real career.
I love my classes and professors. Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford University. Just start it and we'll help you finish. For information, call 1-800-444-0804 or check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. The judge has approved an ebook settlement.
Uh-huh.
And this is actually good news for ebook people. The judge approved this last week a Justice Department settlement with three publishers who were accused of conspiring with Apple and other publishers to push up the price of electronic books. The Justice Department had accused Apple and five publishers in April of illegally colluding on prices as part of an effort to fight the internet retailer Amazon's dominance of ebooks. Now, the proposed settlement was unpopular with bookseller Barnes & Noble and the American Bookseller Association, which represents independent stores, with both arguing that it would strengthen Amazon's dominance. Many people in the publishing industry accuse Amazon of selling books below cost to drive other ebook sellers out of business and then raising prices. Apple is accused of convincing the five publishers, the agency model that allows publishers to set the price of the ebook, and in turn, Apple would take a 30% cut. So that's why when you go on to, say, Apple iTunes, the cost of the ebook is the same as the paperback book, which really didn't seem fair to me, but it's how they did it. And so now they've been accused of price fixing on that area. And I think what we're going to see now that this settlement has come through, that we are going to see the price of ebooks falling, where now the publishers will sell the books at wholesale to distributors, and the distributors can sell it for whatever they want.
Uh-huh.
And of course, Apple doesn't want that, because if they buy the ebook at a wholesale price, they can't mark it up 30% because Amazon's only going to mark it up 5%. So it's going to cut into Apple's profit. So they don't like it doing it that way. But I believe this is good for the consumer because overall prices are going to drop on ebooks. And I've been reading a lot of ebooks. I got an iPad, so I'm getting them all for Apple iTunes. And
mm-hmm.
so it's There's no price advantage at all on the ebook deal.
I can't decide whether I want to. I like reading books, mm-hmm. so I don't know if I want to read. But it's such a neat concept that I'm.
Well, I'll tell you where it has really been effective for me. When I fly to India or, say, Vietnam, I get these long flights because the iPad lights up, so I don't have to turn on the light in the airline, and I just prop up the iPad, and it's very comfortable to read in a dark airplane with an iPad. So I've really, since I've been I don't watch movies anymore in the airplane. Mm-hmm. I just read.
You've seen them all.
Well, I fly in Qatar Air. They must have 150 movies.
And that's it.
And it's like movie on demand. I mean,
really?
And the movies, you know, whatever movie, you can start and stop a movie, you pick whatever you want. So the thing, when I first went there, I thought, wow, movie on demand. I'd watch four movies going over, four movies coming back, and I thought, what a waste of time. So
yeah.
So now I just read. But I can't watch all those movies.
Right. Speaking of that, not to throw you a curveball, I heard this past week that Apple's going to come up with a smaller version of the iPad. Have you heard that?
Yeah. It's a 7-inch, smaller version of the iPad in order to compete with the Kindle and some of these smaller devices. Mm-hmm. That is going to be released very soon. They've been talking about it for quite a while, and it's a smaller screen because actually, the iPad, if you try to read and hold the iPad in one hand, it's a little heavy.
Yeah, sure.
And so a smaller device may be more convenient to read, so it's more Kindle size. And that price is going to be around $299.
Really?
Might be $199. And so they are going to drive the tablet market. And so that is one reason, by the way, that Apple stock's going up, because the release of the mini iPad, which is going to be around the same time as the release of the iPhone 5.
But the problem with that is, and you've brought this up before, is that the iPad, reading it outdoors, like at the beach or something, you can't really do it that well because the backlit Kindle is
the iPad does not work in sunlight. Mm-hmm. No. I mean, if I'm at the swimming pool and have to read the iPad, I have to put a towel over my head. And it just looks, well, weird.
I put a towel over my head at the beach anyway.
But the thing is, if you've got a Kindle which uses reflected light, mm-hmm. that works very well in the sunlight. But then it doesn't work in darkness, so there's some guy with a Kindle on the airplane. He had to turn on the overhead light. In order to use his Kindle, which lit up the whole plane, and it upset everybody. Yeah. I didn't like it.
All right, okay. You're listening to Tech Talk. We'll be back with more stuff after this on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2, 103.5 FM HD2.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
Demand is great for IT professionals that can gain a security clearance. According to a recent Federal Computer Week article, federal agencies and private sector businesses that support government contracts can't get enough credentialed people to keep pace with government work. Tremendous opportunities exist for mid-career and late-career workers if they are retrained, particularly if they have had previous military service. Stratford University's bachelor's degree in information technology prepares students to analyze, design, implement, administer, and secure computer networks and information systems. Master's degrees are also offered in information systems and software engineering. Day and evening classes are offered so you can continue in your current field. Call Stratford University at 800-444-0804 or visit online at stratford.edu. That's 800-444-0804. Stratford University, Tyson's Corner and Woodbridge.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. Let's talk a little bit about home theater essentials. You know, the price of these big flat panel TVs has been dropping. And so now you can buy a huge flat panel TV for just a few $100.
Mm-hmm,
and
yeah.
Really great quality. And, But now, once you get the great TV, you might as well turn it into a home theater system. And so, you know, what are some of the key components that you'd like to have? Well, One thing that I think would be useful, especially if you've got kids in the house, would be a game console, either an Xbox or a PlayStation 3, PS3. Game consoles are great on these systems. You've got HDTV. You can get really gaming that is almost surround gaming. It's great for the kids. So that is that's a very good addition to your home theater. You want a Blu-ray player because the old DVD players, the old DVDs don't have the resolution of the Blu-ray. The Blu-ray's mm-hmm. got great high quality. You want a Blu-ray player so you can play high quality Blu-ray movies. You want a universal remote because you're going to have all these different things. And I'm telling you, I recommend Harmony. The Harmony Link is a great universal remote. It's fantastic.
And you're not getting a check for them, are you?
No, I'm not. I just like it so much. I've been wanting a Wi-Fi remote system for so long. I mean, mm-hmm. it's such a natural idea. And finally, Harmony came out with it. You need a speaker system. And speaker systems have really come down in price pretty dramatically. Don't use those tinny speakers that are in your TV. It's just a sacrilege. And so you can get they have these sound bars that basically use it's like a phased array, and it's very directional, so you can get like a Bose sound bar that fits in underneath the TV, and then you don't have to install all these five speakers.
Uh-huh.
It basically simulates four or five speakers, and it's really quite amazing.
Bose makes amazing stuff, don't
they? Yeah, it's really quite amazing, and the physics in that is, these are basically acoustic phased arrays, and they can control the direction of the sound, or you could just get a regular sound system if you'd want. And sound systems have really come down in price, so you're not going to have to spend that much for it. And then you need media streaming because you're going to want Netflix movies. I mean, why spend all that money for a cable connection when you can just stream Netflix for like $10 a month? That's what my son does. He's got a Netflix account. He streams stuff to his iPhone.
Really?
As well as to his home theater at home. And so he streams Netflix to his iPhone, and he does that because he's on my data plan.
And you're still paying for it.
And I'm still paying for it, yeah.
Right.
But he has unlimited data.
Uh-huh.
But
it's the only way to go.
Now I'm going to be weaning him off the data plan on the next.
He's married now, right?
I know, the next cycle. That's always the last things to go, is getting the kids off the data plan.
Uh-huh.
You know, and so it's always a series.
And then they figure out how much it costs.
That's right. Well, son, I'm sorry, but I feel your pain.
He's on fire today, folks.
Yeah. Okay, let's talk about some headphones under $50. I mean, the other thing is, you get these MP3 players, you get some nice devices. Wouldn't be good to have some nice high-quality earphones.
Sure.
Panasonic's got one called ErgoFit. They're only about $10. Pretty nice high-quality devices. Panasonic mm-hmm. ErgoFit. There's another earbud that's very high-quality, ME Electronics, the A151. They're around $50. That's kind of an expensive one, but it is extremely high quality. Now, if you want something that goes over the ear, they've got the COS Porta Pro. It's over the ear phone. It folds up. It's around $40. It's very nice because it folds up in a nice compact thing if you have to travel with it. So COS mm-hmm. Porta Pro is a great one to travel with. If you want to go for something higher end but still under $50, Audio Technica ATHM30 is good at around $50. Very comfortable. But these are really big, so people know you're really listening to serious music when you wear those. Or the one that CNET recommended as the best headphone under $50, it's around $40, is the Panasonic RP-HTX7. Panasonic RP-HTX7, that was the best over-the-ear earphone under $50, and I'd certainly recommend that.
I see nothing from Sony on this list.
No, nothing from Sony, but these are all, Sony's all high-end. These are low-end pricing.
Oh, yeah.
I'll tell you, the show just
isn't it
went
amazing?
So fast. Yeah, I'll tell you, we love your emails. Email us at techtalk@stratford.edu, and that'll be forwarded straight to me. Also, go to Stratford University and check out the programs and let them know that you listen to them on Tech Talk, and also you can get the podcast by going to techtalkonline.com.
If you like this show, listen to it again tomorrow at 6 in the afternoon.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program. WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWTFM HD2 Manassas, WTOPFM HD2 Washington. This is Federal News Radio, on the air at 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a sense of federal community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. Nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of Washington Nationals baseball, Washington Capitals hockey, the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, and American University Eagles basketball. Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m., the Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics, and your source for federal news now.
And, of course, we do have Washington Nationals baseball on the air later on today. Pre-game starts at 12:30. The Nats lost to the Marlins last night 9-7. Ross Detweiler on the hill for the Nats today. The weather forecast for Washington for today, it is going to be an interesting day. It is starting off kind of muggy and cloudy. We're going to have a good chance for some severe thunderstorms later on today. Right now, outside our studios in northwest Washington, we have cloudy skies, 78 degrees. It is 10 a.m.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during